Welcome to Mobile Mastermind Sessions by Smatics, where we bring trends, insights, and updates from industry brains of the programmatic advertising ecosystem. I'm Steven, CRO at Smatics, and today we've got a great opportunity here, some really interesting insights with Maurer Sadras. All right, Maurer, so I was wondering if you could just introduce yourself and share it with our audience a little bit about your experience, background in the industry. From what I remember, when I first met you, you have a really interesting career path, I think, in ad tech specifically.
Yeah. So first of all, Steven, it's really, really awesome to connect again. It's been a while since I've seen you on video. We go way back. So a little bit about myself. So hi, everybody. I'm Maurer Sadras. I'm CEO, co-founder of Incremental. I've been in marketing technology for a bit more than 20 years. So usually it's kind of like, oh, fuck, he's been there for a while. I completely started from the bottom. My first role was in this like weird ad network, early 2000, doing lead generation and then going for the holy grail of roles, which was an account manager. I think I was fairly more tech savvy than my colleagues back then. This is like early 2000, so we had to teach people how to use email or how to use a mouse. And for me, kind of like growing up with computers is like kind of things made sense. A couple of years later, I had an opportunity to move to London, take a trafficker/edops role, which I absolutely love. This was like a really, really small company where, you get to do a lot of things. After almost 4 years there back and forth, I decided to make my dive into the client side, like advertiser side with online gambling. I did not like that. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just not my cup of tea,
yeah.
Ethics wise. Basically I had an opportunity to join Matomi. Matomi back then was like a very large network. I took the plunge, means there I had an opportunity. It was kind of like a choice. Take a product role, take a publisher role, or take an advertiser sales role. And I think that was one of the best decisions I made for my career. I went for what scared me the most, which was sales. I had zero experience in that, and I didn't really think that I was like a natural born salesperson. Did that. Then a good friend of mine told me switch to mobile after a while, and I was like, next year is the year of mobile. No one's looking at mobile. It's not interesting. But I did get an opportunity from an SSP, Interactive. Started there when the company was tiny and basically also met who is now my co-founder. He was the CTO. We built that up. And then a couple of years later, this dude pinged me from Berlin with a company called Applift, asking me, would I consider joining them for a role and moving to Berlin? I was like, what? No. They did offer me, they offered to fly me to Berlin for the interview. And there I met a lot of people and I was like beyond impressed, decided to indeed move. I started VP strategic development, which actually was my most fun role because I had technically no real responsibility, but it was just really fun. Fairly quickly became chief revenue officer. Then a couple of years later, was promoted to the CEO role. Went through some hard times. This was like CPI Networks, 2017, 18. In 19, sold it to a strategic. And basically decided to go after what was my, passion, which was to solve this measurement problem, which really bugged me for a long time. Incremental is now almost 2 years old. 15 people, the majority are tech, to be fair, but we just announced fundraising like yesterday.
I did read about that. Congratulations. And speak of Incremental, if you could tell the audience a little bit about what it is, what kind of problems you're solving. And I know it's a really interesting topic. I don't know nearly enough as much as I should. It'd be kind of cool.
Cool. Yeah. So I would say that throughout my career, I was always kind of curious/opinionated about the whole topic of marketing measurement. And the ways that this was solved was, okay, let's just give 100% credit to whoever touches the user last, whoever generates the last click, the last view, and so on. And I think, again, I'm coming from a couple of years in Applit, we've seen what horrific things this can actually cause, enormous amounts of fraud, enormous amounts of bad decisions by marketers. And to be fair, again, the system was kind of like doing what it was supposed to be doing. Again, it's like, you know, why not give 100% credit to whoever touched the user last? But the system was broken. This was not answering the measurement problem. Now, I really, really became frustrated about this. It's fairly opinionated, and I wanted to solve this. To be fair, my solution, I wanted to build better attribution. I wanted to build multi-touch attribution for mobile using first-party data. And yeah, I was really lucky to have a co-founder which said, wait a second, I'm hearing more the term incrementality. And we really started thinking about that. And I was really stuck thinking, how do we connect what the user did, where the user has been? But he came with a completely different approach, like an algorithmic approach, what is called causal data science. That's essentially the area we live in. Yeah, and so Incremental was launched as an incrementality measurement tool, allowing customers to measure what is the actual incremental value of their marketing activities. We started the company. We used to tell people, yeah, only a fraction of marketers get the problem we're solving right now, but maybe in the future, the operating systems will deprecate access to user level data, and that will create a boost. And that happened like the month we started the company. So that was an amazing momentum for us. And then we started scaling fairly fast. And then again, we started also winning some customers who said, hey, I want to measure TV. And we basically understood that the model doesn't really care that much about the screen. The model simply measures. And yeah, so now Incremental is actually majority of the customers are completely cross-platform. Like 70% of the customers are cross-platform. The ones who are not are either mobile or web, because the model doesn't really care. And yeah, it's heavily used by, I don't know, customers across multiple verticals, which is quite amazing to see.
Great. And you know, speaking of customers, maybe if you can walk us through, you know, what a typical customer might look like, if there is a typical profile, you know, are they facing typical issues across the board? What do they struggle with? Is there a particular vertical, size, et cetera?
Yeah, so it's extremely wide. To give you some examples of names that I can mention, because they like gave us permission for the PR. So take a company like Tier, okay, the scooter app company. So these guys are essentially using the platform because they're struggling to measure on iOS, and they're struggling to basically measure appropriately because seasonality is a high impact like force for their marketing. And then on the other hand, you have liveouter.com, or a company called Outer, which sells fairly expensive outdoor furniture through a website. These two companies have almost nothing to do with one another from like a surface standpoint, but they both have the same problem. They both basically understand that, hey, we cannot rely on the way we've been doing measurements. Even if we still have access to user level data, we just cannot go for a point where we are just giving 100% credit to whoever touched the user last. Because just imagine yourself, Steven, like, maybe you bought a car in the last couple of years, and maybe you did touch like a couple of marketing messages along the way. Could you really give credit to a single one?
Exactly. No. I mean, you know, I did buy a car right during the middle of the pandemic. And I think, no, I would not be able to. Not possible.
Yeah. So, like, again, users naturally see a lot more ads along the way. And I would say, like, I was when we started, fairly stuck on the idea of multi-touch, really, really trying to understand what the user did, what the user has, where the user has been, and so on. And no, we dropped it, to the point where contractually, we asked customers to not give us any PII data.
Okay. And I mean, was there obviously a little bit of friction when you guys made that decision, or was it completely, it was very clear cut? Yeah.
No. It was for us, like, pretty natural. And obviously it also helps reduce friction. Like, you know, some of the fintech companies we work with, for example, when you tell their legal teams, we don't want your PII, they're fairly happy.
Like, okay. Stop to assume. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Interesting. All right. Going back to Incremental, you and your team, when you were building this, were there any particularly interesting moments that kind of changed the way that you delivered or built your roadmap? Anything that kind of a light bulb moment where, actually this makes complete sense. Let's pivot. You spoke a little bit about multi-touch attribution versus incrementality. Anything else that might be interesting for people to know about?
The biggest one, again, coming from 10 years of mobile, and my co-founder also coming from 10 years of mobile, incremental was supposed to be mobile only. and then for us, it made sense. The mobile, like the biggest measurement problem is at least as we see it. And then we had some customers saying, hey, can we use the platform to measure influencer marketing or television? And we initially were like, no, we want to focus. We're like entrepreneurs that believe in focus. But then we started asking ourselves, wait, why not? Like the model doesn't care. The model basically looks at, you made this change. You spent here, you spent there, you changed this, you changed that, okay? What incremental value it costs? What decremental value it costs? And I would say that this like inbound interest, I think what helped there, so the first customer that brought like web and TV and so on was such a popular brand that my co-founder was like, let's do it. So focus. And then there was this brand where my co-founder was like, let's just do it. And I think when he did it, I would say my side, kind of like running the business side, was, okay, all gates are open. I'm just going to bring any customer from here on. So yeah, so that was a huge pivot moment. Of course, it completely changed our roadmap. Like we initially thought we're going to build this platform and going to make it like self-service integration. Anybody will be able to just integrate themselves. And when it became cross-platform, self-service integration is not that easy. When you need to collect TV ad spend data and influencers and Google spend and Facebook spend, so on, it's just a completely different ball game. So that was a huge, huge change. I wouldn't call it a pivot because the vision of the company remained always the same. Okay, we want to evolve marketing measurements from measuring clicks to measuring value. That's like remain the same throughout the life cycle of the company.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. All right. And then, you know, in terms of when you guys are, going out to the market and speaking with advertisers that are touching measurement, you know, obviously from what I understand, you know, you're quite outspoken, I think, on this topic. And, my take is that you guys share a very different view from maybe most, if not almost all other measurement partners in the market. Is that true? You know, what are some of these differences? You know, how does the market reconcile them? Would love to hear more.
Yeah. So I would say again, it's like, you know, we don't necessarily go against the traditional mobile attribution companies. Okay. It's like, you know what these guys do? Again, the system is fine. They are attributing, okay? They are giving their customers an amazing proxy that is real time. We cannot do real time. And again, if you're a marketer and you're marketing at enormous scales and you need to make real time decisions, last touch attribution is going to be the only one that is real time, okay? None of the other methodologies are real time. But to large enough marketers, they simply need to understand it's really just about expectations, okay? If you align your expectations to what you're able to get from last touch attribution, but not get from last touch attribution, then you're getting it. And I would say right now, I would say sometimes maybe we're like honest to a fault, but like when we train customers on how to use the platform, we have a session that basically says, look, these are the use cases that we just don't think you should use our platform for. These are the use cases that you 100% should be using a platform for. And here's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 examples of where if you had not taken the decision based on our data, you would have made a really, really terrible decision. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Understood. And, I'd love to share a little bit more about, I'd love to have you share a little bit more about your journey, founding this company. I think it was founded in the midst of the pandemic, I'm assuming building something in the middle of the pandemic and after must have been incredibly different from other experiences that other founders have had. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What was the, maybe an unknown challenge? What was easier than you had expected? Would love to hear about that.
Yeah, so this is the first company I co-founded, okay? Before this, I was a hired gun. And yes, I was even CEO for Applive, but I was still basically an employee. And I would say I've always wanted to found a company. And it was always fear, kind of like to drive me away from this. It was always the, you know, fear, what if it doesn't succeed? What if we cannot raise money? What if I cannot pay the bills without a salary? And honestly, this was so like not the point. Like when we just started it, fairly quickly we saw that, okay, we're building something that's like going to be extremely successful. And the amount of support we got was quite incredible. Now, when I take the pandemic here into factor. So my co-founder used to also live in Berlin, but his family moved to Israel. And then the decision was he's going to fly back and forth. And then he flew and there was no back. he pretty much got stuck in Israel to the point where we said, okay, we're just going to do it remotely. Now, starting a company when your co-founder is like, you know, 4-hour flight away was, apparently, like, again, I think there was a huge benefit that we knew one another. So we knew how to work with one another. And I would say there, like, you know, being able to do like 8-9 Zoom calls a day with investors, advisors, customers to kind of like research what we're doing and kind of like an always on setup. While, by the way, it's like a big perk of the pandemic was being an entrepreneur, but still having like time with your kids, which for me was like amazing, pretty awesome. Like I couldn't have done it in any other situation. Then I would say, like, again, like when I look at, I don't know, our early investor base, it's completely global. This wouldn't have happened if this was like pre-pandemic where everything was face-to-face meetings. We would need to do like
roadshows.
Like 7 roadshows.
Exactly, yeah. Locally. And
so this, I think in terms of like speed, pandemic helped us. And weirdly enough to say, but pandemic situation helped us. Of course, again, for hiring the first team or first people, these were people that kind of like worked with us in the past. So this was much easier. But yeah, it was quite odd in a way to have not seen my co-founder for the first 18 months of the life of the company.
Yeah, well, it's and certainly as we're, you know, coming out of the pandemic or COVID, it's you know, I know there's a little bit that's bubbling up. Cyclically, but you know, and how have you guys had to change the way that you operate coming out of this? Is it much easier? Is it just different? Any behaviors that need to change or strategic moves, etc.?
Like apparently I will need to travel, to be fair. And again, you know me, Steven, I used to fly a lot. I used to fly at least more than 100 days a year on work trips. I've really gotten used to not flying, and I absolutely love work from home, to be fair. The team in Israel, so the majority of team are based in Israel. They have an office there. Some people go into the office every day. Most people come in like, I don't know, 2-3 times a week. I think by now it's at least this is the status quo for now. Maybe it will change in a couple of years, but I don't really know where it will change. If it'll go back to how it used to be, like everybody's in office. Or if it's going to continue kind of this like hybrid mode forever.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good point. I think that, you know, prior to the pandemic, when I was doing sales with you and I remember you constantly on the move, it's like, what time zone are you in? It was very different to do sales, especially media sales. And now with, as we're starting to come out, events, I mean, I love going back to these events and meeting people in person. I think it's changed. I think the way that we prospect, that a lot of sales folks are prospecting and onboarding clients is very different. And I think that's also changed, you know, to reduce a lot of friction. It's really interesting. I'm fascinated by that. And I don't know, like, you know, a company like Incremental, well, you know, very product driven, is that, does that change the way that you know, had it been a different type of company, perhaps that, you know, things would be a lot different now where remote work or working separately might not be as easy?
I would say that, so Incremental is very different than like previous company I worked for or even led. Incremental is a completely product-driven SaaS company. We are 100% inbound these days. So it's really just about, you know, customers figuring out that we exist and booking a demo and seeing the platform and kind of like wanting to get on board on it. And then going through like online training, but it's a really, really, really simple product you use at the end of the day, it's a measuring tape. Mm-hmm. Everybody can use a measuring tape.
Exactly.
So I would say it does change things. To be fair, I think from day one, the way my co-founder and I saw it is that we wanted to build a product that is accessible for everybody. Okay. So there is like packages for mega enterprise customers that are doing linear TV and so on. And there's packages for, I don't know, indie developer that has like 30K spent.
Got it.
So we want to enable everybody.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking about, you know, the market and your customers, you know, from your very unique perspective where you sit currently, can you walk us through, you know, with all these changes that have happened recently with privacy, with data, with targeting, shifts in how advertisers are spending, you know, what do you think this means specifically for mobile ad tech, for programmatic, what we're going through right now? I think it's something that you also have been quite prescient about, at least from what I've read. Would love to hear a little bit more about what you think is happening.
I think we're probably biased, or at least I'm biased in my opinion there, because the spends we see, the customers we see, are obviously the ones who get that the ways of the past are no longer, and that they need a new approach for measurements. And those come in with a high expectation of being able to, again, properly measure and make decisions. And some of them know that decisions they took in the last, let's say, 12 months might be completely off because the data was completely off. Like, I think a year ago, what I was seeing customers basically shift away spends dramatically from this platform to this platform just because this one was still working on fingerprinting. Sorry, but I'm not going to call it probabilistic because it's not probabilistic. Fingerprinting. And this platform was 100% relied on like SCAD or SKA network. I think that, again, companies are getting that they cannot like rely on what they were used to. And they just need a different approach.
What and this approach going forward, you know, the future of, you know, how mobile ad tech looks like, do you anticipate with a lot more what's happening around privacy with Google, with the other SANs that, you know, if you pluck somebody out from 2020, a UA manager, and plop them into 2023, 24, is this just a completely different ballgame? Is this anything recognizable, or do you have elements to transition over?
Really, really, really good question. I might actually steal it for my podcast as well, but really good question. I think, yes, a marketer, like where a marketer is spending, the way a marketer is thinking will look very different 2 years from now versus what it is today. And 100%, it's extremely different than what it was 2 years ago. It's really interesting. It's like you see UA people who have experience that is like, I don't know, 6-7 years. They're really struggling adapting. While the younger ones coming into this world where that's what you have are actually, I think, getting it better because in a way, today's form of marketing and the ability to actually only kind of like measure in aggregation and be able to, or at least the requirement to make strategic decisions and follow up on them and not try to like overly optimize using like real-time data has changed.
Okay.
You cannot do this. So you need to be a lot more creative as a marketer, which is, you know, kind of like a bit more like old school marketing, maybe not like Mad Men style, but yes, you need to like actually put a lot more strategic thought. So one of the worst things that happened when it came to the access of user level data is pretty much any marketer could just throw a budget at one of the self-attributing platforms and they would make it work. Okay. Because they had like crazy lookalike data and so on. This doesn't work anymore. Now, the problem with this is essentially that if you were a marketer and all you knew was, I'm just going to throw in budget here and it's going to work, you have zero transferable skills to today's world. You don't know how to market, basically.
Yeah.
It's like this idea of data-driven marketers for the last years basically became, okay, just throw your money into a black box and it'll work. But that doesn't work anymore. So you need to go and think of contextual and creative, and it's like, that's what a marketer's job should be, I think. and yeah, so I don't know. I was, you know, putting aside incremental, I was actually fairly grateful of this like move towards privacy first, or at least just not this like crazy access to user level data and marketers believing that their marketing performance is deterministic. I never appreciated this word.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I think it would be, I can also see that there's a transition from, you know, what you had mentioned, you know, 2 years ago versus now versus what might be a more of a holistic approach, probably, where you just need to be a lot more creative. That makes complete sense to me. Thank you for joining us again, Maurer. And to everybody else listening, if any of you want to reach out for more insights, please do through our Semantics LinkedIn profile page. Until the next edition of Mobile Masterminds, this is Steven from Semantics. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.